Dear future, I'm ready to jump. I'm ready to experiment and to create a future with diversity and inclusion, combining regeneration of nature and our economy.
This is Dear Future, I'm Ready, a podcast brought to you from Amsterdam by Digital Society School and Transformational Studio. Your hosts for today are Carola Vashore and Marco van Hout. Together, they bring new questions for topics that are still largely unanswered, engaging with thought leaders on transformational topics that open up the conversation and the exploration of what's next as we navigate the 21st century, so that we can all say, Dear Future, I'm ready.
Celianica Margo Borges is lecturer and researcher at Breda University of Applied Sciences in the Netherlands, and also a member of the executive board of the Taos Institute in the United States. Working with constructionist theory and design-oriented methodologies, she is also the founder of Designing Conversations, where she consults in dialogical processes and innovative approaches to research and intervention. Welcome to 21 for 21, Celiani. We are very much looking forward to this conversation.
Thank you, Carola. Thank you, Marco.
Hi, Celiani. So we are talking always to transformational leaders, and you're one of them. People who are ahead of the curve and to whom we can ask what the view's like from their perspective to inspire us in our transformational journeys. And today we really hope to talk with you, Celiani, about the potential of dialogue, collective creativity, imagineering design, and social change. And even though you are from Brazil, you are currently making a sabbatical journey to rediscover the Southern Hemisphere. So we would love to talk about that as well. And I'm really curious to hear from you how you see things in these very tumultuous times and how the current world stage is impacting you, your work, and what your hopes and visions are for the future.
Well, I don't think right now we can have an answer to what's happening in the world. Maybe 10 years from now, looking back, we're going to have a better insights on what really happened. But I can share a little bit my experience navigating, especially these last 2 years where we are experiencing these pandemic times. And I think the world has been changing very fast. And with the COVID-19, we really speed up with the changes. Changes at home, at work, with technologies, with connecting. And I think we are really facing what some authors call complex problem. And in order to face it and in order to deal with that, we really need to understand the quality of the problems we face. And these authors, they make some difference between simple, complicated, and complex problems. And a simple problem could be a flat tire that you just have a little equipment to fix it. And then this recipe just makes the deal. A complicated problem would be more similar to simple, but requiring more sophisticated equipment. So these authors, they say sending a rocket to the moon is very complicated. However, once you master those equations, mathematical equations, the physics complications, you can always bring more rockets to the moon. But what we are facing now with this changing world is a lot of complex problems. And the complex problems are problems in which we need to understand unique conditions. And they are very interdependent and also non-linear. And what we say about complex problems, and I work a lot with those, is in order to tackle those complex problems, you need first to start asking questions. And also, you need to involve people who are participating in these questions and in these problems. So I think right now, what the world needs is a more interconnectedness. And we are globalized, but I think we still have the challenge to, as we say, think global and act local. So I think locality is something we really need to focus our attention right now.
Oh, I love that. And actually, the difference between complicated problems and complex problems is something that I work with a lot also at the Digital Society School. And what I always tell the trainees and the students that we have is that we are often still treating complex problems as if they were complicated. And I would love to hear from you what you think. You already mentioned a few things, but what would have to change in terms of what we teach our students in order to actually be able to change their mindset in terms of how to interpret these problems? As an educator, how would you approach that?
I would say, and quoting the famous Einstein, we cannot solve problems with the same logic that was they were created. We need to think of what could be a new logic for the educational system, and not just adding more of the same. So adding more creativity, adding more tools and redesigning curriculums. We need to think of what is the logic in which we are teaching and facilitating learning processes. And I would say we should create curators of knowledge instead of owners of content. So traditionally, as teachers, we are the owners of content. So we come into the classroom as the one who knows things, and we're going to teach those poor students who are there not knowing anything. How can we shift that and become facilitators of learning processes and really tapping into the knowledge that those students are bringing to us, because they are bringing different knowledge? And if we can mix and include the diversity of knowledge, then we are able to innovate and to come up with effective ideas for creating desirable futures.
Inspiring. And I think that it really, for me, hearing you speak, it lifts my hopes up, because I think that how dire the situation is right now, also the omnipresence of that complexity, that there is nowhere to go where it is not complex, has led us almost at sort of a very macro societal level to admit that the problem is systemic, and to realize that having a fragmented approach or an approach based on previous knowledge is simply not going to make the cut, right? In these transformational times, really, if we are going to transform towards a more sustainable society, we need to start deeply thinking about how we organize ourselves differently, even when we don't know what that might look like, which means that, as you said, we have to start with questions that are unanswerable from the perspective at which we are believing, feeling, connecting, interacting in a way that is knowing that together we can build perspective, together we can find different avenues for change. But it does require a change of mindset, and it does require us being able to embrace new competencies even when we don't feel yet capable of being the designers of the transformation. So we really have to become different from who we are, think different from who we are, while at the same time we cannot help but be who we are. So how do you look at this? How do you see that role of learning as opposed to the role of education, and how we go beyond the transformation in order to arrive at the insights that may open new possibilities for us? How does one do that?
That's a challenge. And I was thinking now, today I was thinking, as I was preparing to talk to you guys, I was thinking about what is transformation? So preparing to have a conversation on transformation, coming from my constructionist perspective, we always start by questioning the word. What is the meaning behind what we are talking about? And then, what is transformation? And in thinking about it, I just realized that when we talk about it, usually we look at transformation from a more mathematical perspective. So the change from one form into another form. So how can you transform from A into B? And in the natural world, maybe that might work in mathematical rules as well. But when we are talking about human systems, then it's not causal. You cannot go from A to B. In between the A to B, many other things might emerge and happen. So transformation here, it's a more fluid and dynamic process. And sometimes we don't notice the very process of change. So when you were talking about changing of logic, Carola, I was thinking, how can we change this logic that when we talk about transformation, we always think of this large project. We think of fixing something. We think of, from the beginning, we already want that specific outcome that blinds us in the process of finding out other possibilities that might be suitable to our context, to our demand. So I would say we need to focus more on the process of coming together and combining our knowledge. And then we would really reach truly what we usually call co-creation. And sometimes co-creation, we just exchange some ideas and we decide which one is the best one and done, we co-created. But the real co-creation, you don't know what's going to happen until you come together and you pay attention at this process of relating and you embrace this uncertainty, but you trust that this togetherness and this diversity and inclusion of knowledge will lead into something useful. So I always say it is in the process that you're going to find the best result. So don't start your process already thinking of what is the result I want, but trust the process in the sense that in the process you will find this best result. So it is about collaborating. Is it about coming together? And it's also about trusting that all of us, we have valuable knowledge to offer.
Yeah, I love that. You know, at the Digital Society School, where I sometimes get to participate as a guest lecturer, I always invite the students to go outside their comfort zones, because I like to say that beyond our comfort zone as individuals are the others. So where I feel uncomfortable, you might not. And there you are to help me, to meet me, to surprise me, to inspire me. But we are so fearsome sometimes to be confronted with the unknown, because we are afraid that we will be alone in the not knowing. I think it's really in the learning process fascinating to discover that there where my knowledge, my certainty ends, is the certainty of someone else. And that is perhaps one of the strongest characteristics of humans. There is this very famous example about how do you know that civilization is occurring? And of course, civilization in these times is not an easy word to confront. And there is this famous story. I don't remember who the scientist, it was a woman scientist who said it. You can tell by doing archaeology and where you find bones that have healed. So the first time that they found a femur, so the bone in the top leg that had healed, they knew that was a civilized culture. Why? Because in the wild, animals never heal their bones. They are eaten by others, by predators. But when an animal would heal their bones, as in humans being animals, of course, and when we were able to heal our bones, it meant that there was someone next to us, tending to us, caring to us, creating the space so that we could grow and heal. and in a world that needs so much healing and so much post-capitalistic growth, so holistic growth, integrative growth, taking care of one another, accepting one another, embracing the not knowing of the other in a compassionate way so that we can evolve together, is really a transformational thing that we can do with and for each other. So thank you so much for expressing that. And I think my favorite definition of transformation is indeed epistemological, and really looking at trans as something that is transgressive, that is beyond, and formation is the structure, the shape it took. It just needs to take another shape.
That and then it also brings me to what I wanted to talk to you about, Sidiana, is a dialogue. Because indeed, if you have to connect in such a manner with each other, we are, of course, next to each other. But in this civilization that we have, dialogue is the form that we chose to actually come together. So how would you then include that in the design field, so to speak, or in the way we create solutions, these dynamic solutions that you mentioned? How would dialogue form a part of that?
Yeah, thank you for this question. I work with dialogue, and I believe dialogue is the way to create innovation, to tap into our collective creativity. And I always say, when I'm facilitating a workshop or a training, and the topic is innovation, creativity, co-creation, I always invite participants to look at the core element behind those concepts: people. You cannot do that without people. And when we are in people's business, everything becomes very complex. And to me, dialogue is a resource to design an environment in which people can become creative, in which people can reach innovative ideas. It could be service, experience, products, whatever. And so dialogue, it's a special way of talking. And I always like to make this difference between dialogue and debate. We are traditionally, we are very used to debate ideas. So you have to rationally convince the other that your idea is the best one. And in the round of conversations, usually the most rational, it's going to win, and that is the final idea embraced. In dialogue, you are less worried in convincing others and more focused on understanding what's coming from the other side. How come this is your way of thinking? How come this is what you are bringing to me now? So dialogue has this capacity to expand understanding. And when you expand understanding, you also start creating novelty into the topic you are talking about. So in dialogue, we have some elements that we really pay attention at, which is having a genuine curiosity towards the others and their ideas. So when you are genuinely curious about something, then you are really curious about how come this is happening here? How come this idea is taking shape in this way? And by being curious, you ask questions that really invite the other to say more. And in saying more, we are really unfolding those understanding processes. The second principle of dialogue is to suspend your judgment on whatever comes. And you replace the judgment also into a curious question. So instead of telling you, I don't agree, this is wrong, I just come up with a curious question. Ah, interesting. This is really far from home. I want to know more about it. So you give time to understand and to see other facets of these ideas that you might not agree with. And another one is the art of crafting questions. And I know Carola works a lot with that as well. So powerful questions also enable people to go beyond the rational thinking that we always have in our minds. So if you ask me, why did you study psychology? Why do you work with social constructionism? All the answers are in my head, ready to deliver. But when you craft different questions, you really invite me to go into different places. And then I can create something new out of what I already know. So in dialogue, using this concept, you open up for innovation, for creativity, and for novelty on a topic.
This is so inspiring. And this brings me to your journey, actually. You're currently on a sabbatical. And you just mentioned before we started the recording that you are having a lot of dialogues in your home ground, where you're from. So you're rediscovering that. Can you take us a little bit on that journey and how those dialogues are forming you at the moment?
I'm living right now a very exciting moment of my life. I'm grateful for the opportunity to be doing a sabbatical year. And living in Europe, in the Netherlands, for the last 11 years, and before that, being in Asia, and before that, living in the United States, left me without the opportunity to really explore more South America and Latin America. I'm 100% Brazilian. I was born and raised in Brazil. But when I start my exploration outside of Brazil, I left the South America, and after some years, and especially studying one Portuguese author, he talks about the importance of looking more at different kind of knowledge, and especially in the global north, we have very long, stable ways of doing things that we keep repeating it. And we should tap more into the knowledge that are coming from different places. And one of those places is the South Hemisphere. And that's where I come from. And I don't know much about outside of Brazil. And I decided to explore more the projects. I decided to put on my curiosity mode and visit projects where they are doing social innovation, where they are doing transformative work from their own context, from their own perspective. In Portuguese, also in Spanish, we call saberes, which is different from just knowledge. Usually knowledge is a more formal way of producing novelty, and saberes is the umbrella of all kinds of knowledge that is available in the world. So it can be a community knowledge, an ancient knowledge, an academic knowledge. I'm visiting projects where they are tapping into the diversity of knowledge and try to transform their own environment. And in this visit, I'm trying to register these different ideas and putting together a cluster of ways of working with innovation, with design, with creativity. And hopefully I can bring it back to the North Hemisphere and invite professionals and students to expand the understanding of knowledge, but also how can we create a more integrated ecosystem in the world and be more open to this diversity.
I'd like to build a bridge also within this podcast series. We have spoken to Sonia Manchava, and Sonia actually gave us, she's a designer like ourselves, and she gave us a really nice insight on the word diseño and disoño. So the ability to dream, the ability to co-create together and give shape and give manifestation and give expression to those dreams that we can create together as society and as groups of humans. And of course, this is a unique capability. And somewhere along the way, we lost track and we thought that this search for knowledge, this search for wisdom was something of what was then called and then seemed not to be true either, as Orlando Wood also told you in this podcast. We thought it was about the left hemisphere. We thought about it was about the logical mathematical. We thought it was about our ability to do constructionist work through language. But our capabilities of expressing and our capabilities of imagining and our capabilities of curiosity are completely multisensorial. If there's one country that knows that, it's Brazil. So really it's about how do we engage at this multi-level in an integrative way with different modes of knowing, different modes of learning. Really powerful stuff. Thank you, Celiane. That's really, really amazing. And the question is, what happens next? How do we start building on those visions? How do we start mapping a road into the future that we don't know what it's going to look like? What is the role of constructionism within that? And how can we help engage that, like in the initiatives that you have, but maybe for our listeners also, things that we can put in practice every day? What are your tips and tricks?
What I'm thinking right now, for me, it's very difficult to think of tips and tricks. I'm thinking now, I love to combine the epistemology or the philosophy of social constructionism, which is very much focused on the social construction of society, the social construction of our social realities, and how can we look at the way we are living and how can we question the status quo, how can we question and challenge what is presented to us. And if this way of living is not fulfilling our lives, we can deconstruct it and reconstruct it. So this philosophy is very powerful in that sense. And then combining with the design approaches, which is quite focused on creative methodologies that invite people to get inspired, to get engaged, to come together and to entertain possible new ideas for a different world and for a more desirable future. I think combining epistemology with methodology, it's quite a good way of working. When we are just in the level of philosophy and epistemology, very quickly we become too abstract. On the other hand, when we are too much focused on tools, then we become too automatic in just having fun with the tools. Oh, this is a creative one. Let's just use it. But what is behind the idea? Simple ideas. When we are working with facilitating processes, we are always into circular shape of coming together. This is super creative, this is nice, but what is behind the idea of sitting together in a circular shape? What I'm trying to create? What is the purpose? So the combination of philosophy with methodology, of having the logic and the values I want to create and have some resources that enable me to create it, I think that's one way that I would say this is a tip for professionals to work. Always make sure you are with these two elements together. And also, in an interconnected world, the increasing the network is always powerful. So the people and the projects I'm visiting right now in South America, they are becoming my network, also my supporting system to increase my capabilities to teach, to think, to work. And then when I combine with my network of Europe in the Netherlands and connect these two sides, what might happen? We don't know yet, but I'm sure when we create those networks of supporting system, we are more integrated into thinking together in this more unique, not unique, but in this more global system, interconnected ecosystem we live in. So I believe this is a good way to move forward.
You and I met originally on the topic of Imagineering, linked to your work that you were doing then, and then continued our conversation on social constructionism. Everything I know on social constructionism, I learned via you, if not from you. And I think one of the important things that the work in Imagineering or in any design-related discipline is that we have the ambition to help transform existing conditions into preferred ones. That is the definition of design that was coined by the late Herbert Simon, transforming what is into what might be. And ideally to do that in a way that is preferred for those who will be affected and impacted by it. Now, within the Digital Society School and myself within my work, we like to use the how might we question, which is everywhere in the design discipline, and make it a bit more about the individual. Not because the individual is divided from the rest, as the word suggests, but actually because the individual is a representative of the broader system and can impact the system. And we like to change that design framework slightly from how might we to how might I so that we. And in this way, we integrate the impact of the individual within his or her community, within his or her space, however big or small that may be, and the world at large. So if we would ask that question to you, Celiani, what is the thing that you are hoping to be able to do for all of us?
You know what? As you said, we met in the context of design approaches and Imagineering, and those ways of working are pretty much future oriented. And I also believe that transformation is about taking what is and creating what might be. So I would say, how might I inspire into future forming movements so that we build capacity for change?
Wonderful. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for doing that. Thank you. Thank you for all the small and beautiful and bright and big and expansive ways that you contribute to that. Because I think that also goes to the point that this is a moment where we are feeling this birth of the new era and we're feeling the contractions. But actually, the dynamics are expansive. We're in a process of discovery, rediscovery of ourselves, our roles, possibilities. And so thank you.
No, thank you. I truly believe these moments of conversations are precious, that we really come together for thinking what might be and how we might live our future together.
Yeah, it's so important. Eh? And also in this time where we actually are seeing that national borders are becoming more important again, and you're actually trying to break those barriers in your journey and in your dialogues. Are you still very hopeful that we can still keep this open mind in also in the design field, in the field where we have to create things at global scale from a local perspective, but still keep our borders open of our minds, right?
I'm very hopeful, sometimes even a bit naive, but I still believe in the power of humanity. And I don't think there's other way than coming together and collaborate together and engage into what might be a more desirable future. I believe in participation, and I believe we have to stand up for ourselves as a community and break the traditional idea that government themselves alone can make decisions and can transform things. So we need to start finding ways in which we collectively can also strengthen our powerful environments and create something together.
Yeah, in that sense, we have to also democratize our creativity. Yeah, so we have to have a seat at the table. And yeah, I hear you. So these were already powerful quotes, but I would love to end with a real powerful quote. this podcast is called Dear Future, I'm Ready. And as you know, we always ask our guests to finish the sentence, Dear Future, I'm Ready, and then tell us what you're most ready for. Could you do that and then we end with a bang?
Sure. Dear future, I'm ready to jump. I'm ready to experiment and to create a future with diversity and inclusion, combining regeneration of nature and our economy.
Nice. So you did have an extra quote ready. There you go.
Straight from the heart.
Thank you so much.
Straight from the heart.
Yeah. Nice. Thank you so much for being our guest. And I think our audience would love to know more. We will put all of the information on the website also, so they can learn more about your work. And hopefully you will also have some kind of documentation or something wrapped up about your journey to share with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. And thank you for this wonderful and generative conversation. Thank you, Marco. Thank you, Carola.
Dear future. Dear future. Dear future.
Dear future.
Dear future, I'm ready.
This is Dear Future, I'm Ready.
Dear future, I'm ready.